This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business. Hello, good evening and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg and it's my great pleasure to bring you the BizNews briefing, our last for the week. And we've got an interesting program for you, kicking off tonight with a follow-up, if you like, to the wonderfully watched special feature from last night. We do, at BizNews, put together a premiere every evening, and the 8 p.m. Date that you need to make with the BizNews TV channel on YouTube is a really worthwhile exercise. Iraj Abedian was our premiere last night. And he is an Iranian, born and bred. Obviously, he's South African. He's been here 45 years. But he gave us some unique insights into Iran. We kick off tonight with a similar trend there by a professor of Cambridge University, Professor Charles Asher Small, who's the director of the university's Institute for the Study of Global Antisemitism. My colleague Chris Dane caught up with the prof earlier today.
Pandor and AMC dignitaries went to Iran, and then they go to Qatar, and then Hamas shows up on the doorstep of South Africa and the government, and they're treated like royalty. And suddenly, the AMC's deficit and debts are mysteriously disappear. Then there's certainly strong superficial evidence that there's something going on. The fact that Pandor has good relations, the fact that MK Kalahari is working also with sort of the Russian angle of this should give members of the African National Congress, with such a profound legacy of fighting for democracy, pause, that there's something wrong. And the ANC leadership needs to question itself. Do you want a quick fix for your financial troubles, or do you want and rectify it slowly and methodically for a bright future, or do you want to take bribes from anti-democratic entities that are diametrically opposed to the raison d'etre of the African National Congress? So it's really, this is really a threat not to Israel and the Jewish people, although it is, as we see that was being played out in The Hague, this theater of the absurd. But this is really a threat to the domestic politics of South Africa. The ANC is being bought through corruption. They're selling out the goals of their brilliant legacy, and they're selling out their own people. They're not delivering on the promises to the average South African people, and their leaders are lining their pockets with money from anti-democratic, Nazi-inspired sources.
Do you think there's any chance that Israel could retaliate against South Africa for dragging it before the International Court of Justice?
It's a good question. I don't know if Israel has the capacity or the bandwidth at this point to focus on South Africa. But I will tell you, I'm based in the United States, and I know, as Washington is preparing itself for the transition of the administration from the Biden administration to the Trump administration, I know that people throughout this new administration, and actually on both aisles, both in the Democratic and Republican Party, the fact that the African National Congress has paved the way for the Iranian revolutionary regime to join BRICS, and they're working with Russia, and they're working with Hamas, this is not going over very well in Washington. And I think that the African National Congress, for a quick fix to line its coffers, its party coffers, is selling out the interests of South Africa. And democratic countries, the United States and other democratic countries, are deeply concerned about South Africa with its important strategic interests to the world. From its resources to its shipping, etc. It was the largest, perhaps the most important democracy in Africa, although now that's questionable. I think that the United States and other countries are very concerned about South Africa drifting into the Iranian and Russian orbit and selling out its democratic values. And I think in Washington, I'm hopeful in Washington, that this issue will be taken very seriously. And the South African people need to tell its leaders in the African National Congress that they better take into consideration the South African people's interest rather than their lining their pockets with some quick cash. We're at an inflection point, and I hope the ANC, that the Democratic part of the ANC, will triumph over the corruption. I can't predict the future, I say humbly, but I think that this situation, South Africa aligning itself with Iran and Hamas, I think they're going to be checked by democratic countries. I don't think this can go on.
Yeah, some more sobering insights there for those people who are championing a cause which we heard last night in the Premier from Iraj Abedian, that 90% of Iranians, 90%, are against the revolutionary people who have taken over there from a small sect of Islam, not even a sect of Islam that most Muslims take terribly seriously anymore. But they've got power, they've got control, and the ANC seems to have found a friend there which could cost dearly in the future. And there's lots of suggestions that South Africa needs to go back to its brilliant situation of being a neutral, being non-aligned. And that way you can do trade, you can engage with all people on the planet. Maybe now that Cyril Ramaphosa is the chair of the G20 for the next year, perhaps that idea is going to permeate a lot more deeply. On to another interview that one of my colleagues did today. Wayne Duvernay from Outer is outspoken for good reason. He's an activist who has trained the Outer lamp or spotlight like a laser on corruption in South Africa. And Kerry Lanigan, our colleague, had a chat with Wayne today about the chaos that's going on around the driver's license issuance. And I'm sure when you listen to this, you'll wonder where it's all going to end.
The whole driver's license card account story goes back a long way. I think there was controversy around the original contract that was issued on the current card, plastic card system. But we've been in the need for a new updated with far higher security measures built into a driver's license system for many years now. And if you look at what's been happening on this issue, it's been in and out of tender processes for a long time. And if you go back just to between 2021 and 2023, this tender went out three times. It was cancelled twice, obviously, in those three times. And every time that happened, there was a lot of ambiguity and lack of transparency as to what were the reasons for the tenders to be cancelled. And by the time we got around to the last tender, there were about 25 companies that expressed interest in participating in this tender, and only five ended up tendering. It really had become an onerous process, changes to the tender conditions. It's very tough tendering. It's costly. You've got to get, you know, contracts with other suppliers and so on. And then we met with the DG of Transport a couple of years ago saying, what is going on here? Please, can you be transparent? Can you keep us informed of what is happening? Be very open around the tender process. And that didn't happen, despite the fact that we were given the assurances that that would happen. It didn't happen. Lo and behold, we heard in September this year that the department had, on the 1st of September, appointed IDEMIA as the successful tenderer. We started asking more questions, and we started to get a lot of information from whistleblowers who showed us the bid tender evaluation processes and the bid adjudication committee's results. And this scheme has got red flags all over it. This is the typical agenda that we see playing out when you want to process a tender in a way that you only have one company standing at the end and they win the tender. The prices have been elevated. The reasons for the technical reasons why they kicked out a number of the tenderers are very obviously skewed and false. And these are the things that we've raised. Fortunately, we have a new minister. Timing couldn't have been better with Barbara Creasy and transport, because this certainly wouldn't have happened under Chikunga and the previous ministers of transport. She could hear our concerns were real, and then tasked the Auditor General to have a look. We've given all our information, as have some of the tenderers who have raised their concerns, to the Auditor General's office. And all we're waiting for now, we believe that that investigation by the Auditor General has been given back to the minister. And we really are expecting very imminently the results of that investigation and the minister's decision whether to allow this tender to continue or to be awarded or to start again. And if it starts again, because there are enough irregularities, I think our questions then would be, who's going to be held accountable? Because there's manipulation here to a high degree, and that's not acceptable.
Who is to blame for the constant extension of the tender?
There's an entity called the DLCA, the Driver's License Card Account. It is a separate entity within the Department of Transport that manages the whole driver's license processing. If the award of this tender goes ahead and it is not halted, then I think what you can expect to see is a litigation challenge brought by a number of the tendering companies, as well as ARTA, against the department if they want to go ahead and issue this tender. So we just have to wait and see whether the minister's going to do what we believe is right, and if not, then we will have to contemplate our next steps, but it's probably going to become a litigious one.
South Africa is so well served by civil society organizations like Wayne Duvenage and his ARTA. Well, on to Johannesburg now, and the mayor has his marching orders. Chris Steyn spoke to the leader of the DA in the Joburg Metro Council, Belinda Kaiser Ekenzon-Ozonyoku, for the reasoning behind this and this what might be coming next.
We haven't seen any reaction from the city manager himself, now former city manager, but we have seen statements from the executive mayor who said they are still studying the judgment to determine what will be the next directive to take. We've also seen this morning a statement by the speaker requesting for an amicable solution, and we're not so sure whatever that means, because in our view, the law is the law and the rule of law is the rule of law. And the judge was very explicit in his judgment yesterday. So there's very mixed reaction that we've seen from the city. We'll have to wait and see what the executive mayor, will be doing later on. But I can also tell you what we are doing next. But as we go through the conversation. What we are doing next is we don't believe that Floyd Brink, the city manager, has appointed himself. He was appointed by council. He was appointed by councillors who voted in favor of this unlawful decision that is now going to cost the city quite a bit of money. We're still, trying to determine the exact cost. But I can tell you our council is close to $500,000, and they have to pay some of our fees. We can only imagine that the average cost, obviously the city would have probably have spent about the same amount of money for the senior council, which brings it close to R1 million. That you and I, residents of Johannesburg, are paying for. And we're saying Floyd did not appoint himself. These councillors who were cautioned about these decisions in council when we raised our dissent, still decided to vote in favor. And that's why we wrote to National Treasury, the Auditor General, COCTA to request that these councillors be held responsible for these unlawful decisions. That is now the third time in court and declared unlawful, unconstitutional, invalid, and look at possible violation of the Municipal Finance Management Act, which relates to the conduct of councillors and voting in favor of unlawful decisions. So we have written already, I sent the letter off last night, to the Minister and the MEC and the National Treasury and the AG to look at fruitless and wasteful expenditure with a view to recover the cost from these councillors who voted in favor of these unlawful decisions.
Let's just call her Belinda K.E., although she is a politician with a very big future. I've been following her announcements and her press releases that have come through continuously. It would be unkind to call her an attack dog, but she certainly is on the case of everybody who's against her political party. It's a young woman in the mold of Helen Ziller. We're going to hear a lot more from her in future. Well, someone we have heard a lot about and indeed will continue to is also with the Democratic Alliance. There's only one, Glynis Breytenbach, and she has some pretty pointed suggestions and opinions on the sideways move of the former Minister of Justice, Thembi Simelane. And she also spoke with Chris Steyn today. Let's catch in.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's seriously disappointing. The president sat on this thing for nearly 5 months with a deeply compromised, deeply conflicted justice minister. Did nothing, dithered, said he needs more time for what the Lord alone knows. And now he does this little sideways shuffle that's just an insult to the intelligence of all South Africans. It's a disgrace, really. I mean, there's nothing to be said about it. Certainly, everybody serves in the cabinet at the pleasure of the president. He's entitled to hire and fire his cabinet ministers as he sees fit. He shouldn't have appointed her because, you know, Simelane says that he was aware of this fact that she was compromised when he appointed her. So he shouldn't have appointed her as the justice minister. You can't have somebody who's compromised and conflicted as the justice portfolio minister. It's big as the imagination. But having appointed her and now, you know, this thing broke, then he should have immediately asked her to step aside. She should have asked her to step aside of her own volition. Clearly she wasn't going to do that. So then he should have moved her out of the way. She's innocent until proven guilty, and that's an absolute fact. Nobody's saying that she's guilty of anything. The fact is that there's a lot of stuff out there. It looks very credible. It is being investigated now by a variety of institutions. The NPA is involved. The Hawks are investigating. The public protector is now looking at it. You can't have that compromised, conflicted person as the head of the justice portfolio. So for 5 months, he sits on his hands and does nothing. Now, in a late night, sort of semi soft shoe shuffle, he moves her sideways to human settlement. Human settlement is important. It's important to millions of South Africans. Is he now suggesting that she's not okay as the justice minister because she's conflicted and compromised, but she's fine for the human settlement? Well, I mean, what does that say about how he views human settlement? She doesn't belong in the cabinet at the moment. She must let this thing run its course, and so should he. And once it's finalized, then you can reevaluate the position. But right now, she doesn't belong in cabinet.
Well, tonight's 8 o'clock premiere with Rob Herseff in the Thursday show takes a very close look at what should be done to the cabinet and how the cabinet is bloated and an excessive drain on taxpayers. But the part of the Thursday show that we're going to give you a taste of, so hopefully you'll be in front of your YouTube channel, wherever you might be, at 8 o'clock tonight, is where Rob Herseff looks back on what we discussed last week about the controversy around the Dimension Data executives. He was very outspoken on the judgment that came out from Judge Denise Fisher, which castigated these six, she called them protagonists. And here's a little taster of what you'll be able to pick up from Rob tonight.
So I always preface everything I said, but if the judgment is correct, if the judge has done a good job, because I read one document, the judgment, and as I said, it read like a crime novel. And since then, a lot of people have also read it and go, that was really easy reading and fascinating and well-structured and a crime novel. But in the week since we spoke about it, you know, I've obviously had taken a lot of phone calls of people who are supporting adding more grist to the mill, more fuel to the fire, but also people saying, you know, what the judgment missed, what I might have missed. You know, I did sort of maybe insinuate that Weber's was on the side of the protagonist. They're not. Weber Wenzel's very much handling the BEE structure, and they're very upset with the situation. So credit to Weber Wenzel for being on that side of the story and being up front. They're an excellent law firm. I use them, not Worksmans. And, you know, what I've heard has given me some doubt about the judgment. I think attacking the judge is a bad thing to do and a wrong thing to do. And that's a mistake if the protagonists are using that as part of their armory. But, you know, having heard quite a bit from the other side, I think that their statement and their appeal should be heard. There are tons of affidavits that haven't come out yet, which I didn't realize. It's just quite an interesting case where there isn't a jury. I mean, the judge hears both sides, makes a judgment, and then they wait for the affidavits. So I think there's still quite a lot of evidence to come out to justify or vilify what's in the judgment. And I think it's two, three years we're going to have to wait before this thing comes to light. I mean, the only two things that I have in my mind that just a query is, why did the protagonist suddenly say, okay, we're happy to walk away if you indemnify us? That's always an odd thing to hear. And if NTT and its lawyers had full access and transparency, if the protagonists had been fully transparent, why did NTT continue pursuing it? So I think there's stuff we don't know, but I think we've got to have an open mind. We can't prejudge the judgment. And as there's an appeal, and we're going to wait and see what happens. So, you know, within the protagonists, there's some very good, decent, honest people. I mean, I've had so many people call and say, so-and-so, there's no way they would be involved in something illegal. Maybe people were pulled along with something that they didn't understand that they were doing. I think lots still to come.
Lots still to come indeed. Well, let's have a look at the markets as of today and what happened on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. It was a weekday for resources, but financials 1.5% higher, pulled there by First Rand to a large degree. First Rand's share price up 2.5% today, so it had a good day. After being soggy for a while, it's interesting to note that there's been some spectacular gains on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange this year by South African stocks. First Rand, not so much. It's only up by 11% year to date. Industrials up just under 1%, the top 40 index, 0.75% higher. On the currency front, South African Rand was firmer against both the dollar and the Rand, and the pound, 14 cents stronger against the dollar, 18 Rand and 3 cents as we speak, and 7 cents better against the pound at 23 Rand. Bitcoin, well, that's something else that Rob paid a lot of attention to in our conversation for the Thursday show. So if you're a Bitcoin enthusiast, you'll get your fix right up front in the discussion from 8 o'clock. It's up nearly 6%. And the reason for that is the appointment of the person who's going to make all the regulations for businesses in America. The previous chairman of the body, the antitrust body, was, well, pretty stern about Bitcoin. The new person has shown that they want less regulation of Bitcoin, and indeed they have been welcomed by business who are believing that you will see more transactions being concluded rather than the heavy hand of the state there. But Bitcoin anyway, they're in front. The Bitcoin faithful have taken that appointment as a very bullish factor. Here at home, on the biggest moving shares, Baldwin Properties was up by nearly 6% today. It's up just under 20% year to date, so it's finally turned around to the good. Another good day for Stefanuti's stocks, up by 3.5%. Its results were really quite special, and the company is now up 237% year to date. I had to go and double check that. I was a bit concerned that our numbers were wrong, but it really has surged since about June this year when the first set of results came through. And then OUTsurance, a spin-off from the First Rand Group, that is up 3.5%, 62.5% year to date. It's going into the top 40 index, so part of the reason for that improvement is no doubt the institution stocking up on it. Vodacom up 3% today, but year to date it's actually down. And then amongst the losers, ArcelorMittal down nearly 5%. Lesaka, which is in the BizNews portfolios, was a 4% loser today. However, it's up 33% year to date, so maybe there's just a bit of profit taking. And the two big Anglo Platinum shares, were under pressure. Anglo Platinum down 3.7% and Impala Platinum 3.6%. There's no new lows posted on the JSE today, and that is an indication of a very strong bull market. And amongst the companies that posted new highs, Baldwin and Archer, we've mentioned. APSA, a 2% gain, took it to a new high. Telkom, the similar improvement there to a new high. Momentum, Southern Sun, Pepkor, which has been on a tear since its financial results were released. In the political front, there were the results of the Thabo Mbeki by-election were announced today. The ANC lost the seat, and they lost the seat to the Labour Party of South Africa, which is very interesting. The Labour Party is related to AMCU, which is an opponent of the ANC's National Union of Mine Workers. And they really hammered the ANC in that constituency. The ANC previously won its Ward 3. They won 70% of that constituency. This time they went down to 26%, and the Labour Party got its first ever seat on the local council. But what happens next is anybody's guess. Previously, there was a DA mayor for a period of time supported by the EFF. The DA no longer plays nice with the EFF, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. A big, big disappointment for MK, Mkhonto we Sizwe, which only managed to get a single seat through the proportional representation system. The DA held on to its four seats. And then finally, there's another bid in for the Springbok sponsorship. This from the Altvest, our friends, our partners, business partners at Altvest. Warren Wheatley and his team have put together a proposal backed by Easy Equities and Rainfin, and they have submitted that to SA Rugby. I'll be talking to Warren Wheatley tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And getting an update from him. Don't forget the premiere with Rob Hersoff this evening, and that comes up at 8 o'clock. It's unmissable. And until Monday, when Bronwyn will be in the hot seat again from the BizNews team of Ruan Erasmus, our technical producer, our executive producer, Lucy Ferreira, and yours truly, Alec Hogg, and Patrick Kidd and his production team, who continue to do such excellent work. Well done, guys. It's been another good week. Thanks for being with us. Until the next time. Cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.